Hello and welcome to a brand new all-English episode of Neon Ghost's Ghost Hour. My name is Benjamin Fiege, and today I have a very special guest for you, Russ Ballard. Russ Ballard is a real hit machine. He created a lot of classics, including Since You've Been Gone, recorded by Rainbow, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, recorded by Kiss, So You Win Again, recorded by Hot Chocolate, and of course, Voices, which was also used in the iconic 1980s cop show Miami Vice, which everyone who knows me knows I'm a huge fan of. Russ is playing in Germany right now, and he just released a new double album called Songs from the Warehouse and The Hits Rewired. Of course, we talked about his new record, but also about the secrets of songwriting, Miami Vice, and how he almost got Elvis to record one of his tunes. Have fun and hit the subscribe button if you enjoy today's episode. Recommend us to your friends and family if you like us, and if not, to your worst enemies.
Neon Ghosts. Ghost Hour. A pop culture podcast.
Benjamin.
Hello?
It's Russ here.
Ah, hi. Wow, that was fast. Ah, fantastic. Yeah, thanks a lot for your time that we could do that. So
yes, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Fantastic. Yeah, in preparation of your this interview, I realized how many big songs you had. It's crazy. Maybe it's like asking a parent what's their favorite child, but do you have like a song that means the most to you out of that huge catalog of hits?
Do you know, I think I've heard it before, but I think people say my latest song, you know, and it is a bit like that. You know, it's lovely to, I mean, there's always stories come along with a hit record. There's always something, you know, first of all, somebody says, yeah, I've made them all initially. I've recorded them all. So, you know, there's always a story because, you know, I say to the publisher, I want to go into the studio to make three demos. Or I say to the producer, like Muff Winwood, I want to go into the studio to make an album. And they're just songs. They're just another song, you know. Suddenly they have a story behind them when they either make it, funnily enough, not from me, but from other people. You know, I made an album called Winning, mm-hmm. and that Muff Winwood produced. The second album, my second solo album, and the first single from that album was Winning, and it was basically a story of my life in three verses and one chorus. You know, it's basically first chorus was saying, one day I was on the ground when I needed a hand, it couldn't be found. I was so far down, I couldn't get up. And then eventually it gets, so I'm winning, I'm winning, I'm winning. I don't intend losing again. So that's the story. Too bad it belonged to me. It was the wrong time and I meant to. It tells the whole story, you know. And then I put it out as a single and it got a few plays, but nothing big on the radio, you know. So 4 years later, Santana recorded it and had a top 10 hit with it in America. So that's the story, and which is quite a funny story because I always thought, yeah, this is a pretty good song actually, but it's strange, you know. And then another one from that album, from the Winning album that I released as a single, the next one I released as a single was Since You've Been Gone, that mm-hmm. Rainbow recorded and lots of people have recorded. Cherry and Mary Curry recorded it. Brian May recorded it. Ed East recorded it. So, I mean, there's been a lot of versions. There are three versions in the American in Billboard, all at different times. But I recorded mine in 1975 and Rainbow recorded theirs in 78. Yeah. Mm. But, you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah. Funny enough, like these days, I'm a huge Miami Vice fan, I have to say, and really by accident, I stumbled over the episodes where they used your songs.
Yeah, voices.
Exactly.
They use voices, and they use the in the night. They
In the
use
night.
Which Ace really recorded later, or before. I think he recorded it. I recorded that in 76, and I think Ace did it in 77. I think just after my album, but he called it Into the Night, which is
Was
quite
that?
that's a good title.
Was that? I mean, this series was really like popular for using contemporary artists' music. Was for you as an artist then like something nice to have or cool they did that, or was that really like a game changer maybe in that moment? Like, did that really boost sales and popularity?
It did actually, because there's been a lot. It seemed to have touched a nerve with people, you know. Even though it was played quite a lot in America, it's played on the radio a lot, and actually got into the radio charts. But it was so. Brian Adams phoned me, and he just phoned me out of the blue. I never met Brian Adams. He phoned me and just said, "Russ, I've got to tell you, I love this song, Voices. It's so introspective." And listening to it again, it was very introspective, you know. But I like that. I like that whole thing, this sort of the darkness of it, really. But it's I always like the idea of the song. I like the idea that it was a different idea. The idea of, your mind being a room, and in that room, in the corner, you see a voice is waiting for me to set it free. And I didn't know where that came from. I had no idea. I hadn't really worked it out. It just flowed, and I got the key, I got the key to the room. And it was fascinating, really, to be honest.
In that show, they also sometimes featured artists like gave them guest roles, acting roles. Would that have interested you too, acting?
I would have had a go. I could have been the clown.
Think they often played villains in the end. Yeah,
No, I could never be the villain. I want to be the hero, Benjamin. I don't want to be the villain.
Yeah, now for your new album, a lot of these classic songs you reimagined, you re-recorded. What led to that decision?
Mainly going back all those years when I was recording these songs, and they became hits for other people. People, being my friends, people where I was doing gigs and things, all said to me, "Why don't you record these songs?" And I say, "I have recorded them." "Yeah, but you should put them on an album, you should put them all on the same album." And initially, I thought, "No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that." But as the years have gone, it seems the obvious thing to do now. You know, I did them, and to put them all together, because they were all fragmented. They all came out at different years: 75, 76, 77, 78, 79, right the way through to 87, when Frida did "I Know There's Something Going On." Kiss re-recorded my song "God Gave Rock and Roll to You." And they recorded that 18 years after I'd recorded it with Arjun,
How difficult was it to pick the songs for that part of the album? Like, did you surprise yourself in that process? Did some songs end up there that you didn't expect it? You didn't expect it?
I didn't expect to do when you make an album, usually you go for continuity. So one track follows another, and they have a kind of a feel. They have a feel that they're all related. But there's one soul song in there that really, I think, stands out. But it was a song that I loved, and I recorded it for myself and took it to my record company, because I was still signed at that time to a major in London. And I took it to the head of the record label, and I said, it's at the time when this, the blue-eyed soul music was out, like 70, 76, 77. There were a lot of those, Boss Gags and Robert Palmer, people like that. There were quite a few. Hall & Oates, they were doing that sort of soul-y thing.
Mm.
And I thought I could do this because I love that kind of music, you know. And I wrote this song called So You Win Again. And the demo, I thought, was really good. So I took it to the head of the record company, who was a friend. And I played it to him. He said, yeah. I said, I think I've got a really good tune here. This could be a great single. And he listened. He said, yeah, yes, it's great. Not for you. Not for you. That's for a black band, you know. And so I thought, what's the point in pursuing this, the blue-eyed something, you know? So I think I was typecast as a rock and roller then, you know, that's the thing. I was writing all kinds of music, you know.
That was more like a thing back then, yeah? Like when you had your image, when you had your category people put you in, it was hard to break out of
that. Yeah. I think it is hard, you know. And people used to say that to me, that sort of thing about the rock thing, you know. And I'd already had, like, since you've been on Out Rainbow, then I Surrender by Rainbow and other rock tunes, you know. And I guess I became a little bit typecast by it. But so I was writing other tunes, you know.
Is that something that changed, like the expectation you have towards a musician back then? When you had your role, people expected you to stay in that lane. I remember, like, Bob Dylan, when he suddenly got electric, people were like losing their minds about it. And today, like, it's the opposite. People always expect an artist to get out of his box to develop.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I was trying to think of the name they called him when he suddenly became out. He suddenly came out of his folk scene in Manchester.
Exactly.
He went electric and he's Judas! Judas! And then lay, Christmas, big rest, beer. You know, so he had that whole thing. He changed so much, but it was still Bob Dylan.
Mm.
You see, when I was writing those tunes, you'll never believe this, but I loved Tamla Motown. I was listening to so much Tamla. And before that was called Gordy, and I used to listen to it all those years ago when it was Berry Gordy's first company. But when they suddenly had Stevie Wonder and they suddenly had Temptations, Smokey Robinson, that kind of stuff, I loved that. And I was writing those kind of tunes, you know, had a backbeat and a R&B feel to it.
Mm.
And I could do that stuff. And, you know, as soon as I went into the studio with a fuzz box, well, with a distortion unit, they came out like rock songs, you know. It's the God's honest truth. That's the God's. And I thought I was making, initially, I thought I was making sort of soul songs. I was going in there playing this ga 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 ga. But I was imagining Jackson 5 or something like that, doing it. I get the same old dream, same time. You take the distortion and the overdrive out of it, and they are soul songs, really. I think they are. People have said to me, I remember somebody in Germany saying to me on the phone, he said to me, why do you always write blues songs? And I didn't understand what he was talking about. Why do you always? But, you know, when I put the phone down, I thought, he's talking about the lyrics. I always write sad songs. Couldn't write a happy song. It was always me left lonely. And you, and I think it must have happened to me in my past, but you know, we all have our moments of happiness and unhappiness, but it's great when you can turn it into a song, you know.
But one hears that from many songwriters, it's always easier, or it seems easier to write a sad song and make people connect with it than write a happy song. Then it's, for some people, gets too poppy. It gets too
that's
sugary.
Right.
Yeah,
but unless you can find a really good lyric, a real a clever happy lyric, you know, you know, if the song is really good, it doesn't matter. A publisher friend of mine years ago said, if you know, a good song would always sell, Russ.
Mm.
It will always come through. That's what he used to say to me, and. I guess in the truth, that's been true in my life. From 40 years ago, that's how it's been. But the thing is, with songs, if you can communicate, and the thing is, as an organism, we are human beings and not really separate from each other. We all have love. We all lose love. We all have emotion that we makes us happy, really happy, or blissful, or really sad. You know, you've all had love affairs. Wherever you go across the world, that's common to all of us. We've all had that in our lives. So, you know, once you, the easiest thing to write about is love, falling in love, falling out of love. You know, that feeling of not loving anymore, the feeling of love dying. You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips. You know, those kind of tunes. And it's wonderful. You listen to it. There's something within. You're not particularly listening to the, you don't even need to know the words. You just know. It's like muscle memory. The body knows, the organism knows that's a sad song. Wherever you play, they play it in Russia or Africa. I think people would identify that as a sad song. It's just the emotion of how it goes, how it moves, and the emotion that's put into it. And that's the same for everybody. We're not separate from each other, as you know, as we look different from each other. We have different names, different color skin, but the human spirit is the same.
Speaking of spirit, the one part of your new album are the classic songs, Rewired. The other part is new material, so far unreleased material.
Yeah.
Like it had some of those songs had a spiritual flavor.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. As you get older, it's finding, it's exciting yourself to get an idea that you feel excited about, or one feels excited about it as one gets older. You want to excite yourself, and so you're looking for new ways, new things to write about. It's like Voices. When I wrote Voices, it was a departure for me, and I got the key and stuff like that. But I was finding something different to write about, something in my life which I could write about, you know. And I found that I liked that, and I did that with Winning. I was writing about my life, basically. But it's the same for everybody, that you know. Trying to find something that sort of communicates with everybody, that, you know, when you can write about yourself or things that have happened to you, you can get deeper into it. I'm trying to find things now about sort of the spirit and the universe. And the thing is, but you know, that it seems to me, as we get older, you know, because we are from the universe as an organism, we are, you know, we're made up of the same stuff, the same chemistry. It's out there and it's within us. It's within the flowers, the trees, the animals, the fish. It's all part of the universe, you know. And you realize we're connected to that as well. How could we be different from each other? We're connected to it, you know. And once you can actually get into that thing about, well, I wrote a song years ago on my album that America recorded, which was, it was a song called I Cast the Spirit. When you feel down and there's darkness around you, when you feel you're about to give up, when you cast the spirit, cast it out. If it's in your body, then let it out. Put out the fire, let it cool down. If it's in your, then let it, if it's in your tears, then let it drown. You know, that kind of thing. I've written quite a few of those things, but this time, I was on the songs from the warehouse, the new songs. I've tried to go into other things. The things I've heard about, a story is really good, or a news item and things. I've written one from, I wrote one from an item, a news item I saw on BBC TV, and it was at lunchtime. And I came in from the studio and I was just watching this thing, and it came to the end of the item. And they had it was all sadness and God knows what. And suddenly they came into this, seemed like a lighter. It was a happy kind of, or an inspiring thing. And I watched this thing, and it was called, it was about a family, a girl of 12, two siblings, one, a girl of 8 and a little boy of 6. And the mother, that was the family. The mother was in a wheelchair and she had multiple sclerosis and she couldn't move. This 12-year-old was getting up every day and she was washing the kids. She was washing the mother. She was giving them breakfast. And she was taking the kids to school, bringing them home. And so she was a carer, this carer. And he inspired me to write this song, Courageous. Now, I saw this item a long while ago, but it stayed with me. And I thought, I've got to write a song about it. So I called this girl Courageous. You know, courageous girl, you're in a mad world. You don't see sadness, only grace, girl. Always there to care for your sister. Now your mother is gone. Courageous, courageous girl. Living in a mad world, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that was inspiring to write. I wrote one about the problems with the church, the problems been in the church in the last few years with stuff going on in the church, you know, with also, well, when you, I think when you actually read the lyrics, you'll know what it's all about. But I picture myself being one of those and being one of those kids, you know, that was abused, basically. So I wrote a song about that, you know. There's always something out there to find. There was another one I wrote about getting older, about a journeyman. I'm a journeyman, just like you. We're all journeymen or journeywomen, aren't we? You know, that's the thing. We're a journey. And I wrote about that, you know, the idea. I wrote another one about the. It was about girls having babies out of wedlock in the 50s, in the 40s, in the 1940s, 1950s, and they were sent away. The babies were taken away from them because they were out of wedlock. You know, the nuns would take the babies away. They would put them on ships, sent to Australia, or they would give them away and that kind of thing. I thought that's a thing worth writing about. So I wrote that. That's called In the Family Way, all for being, you know, this sadness happening because in the family, I was in the family way. And very, very sad, but it's a great thing to write about, but it's very, very sad.
How does songwriting differ from you from like maybe 40 years ago? I hear from a lot of artists, when they get older, so to speak, the creativity is still there, the ideas are still there, but maybe the sources of inspiration change, or also it takes a bit longer, maybe.
Yeah, you're right. For me, the best songs, and I've heard it from a lot of writers, are very quick songs. You know, funnily enough, you know, the very quick songs, the hits of mine were always very, very quick. You know, you get an idea and you just write it and you put it out there. As you get older, you become more kind of picky and you want to sort of get deep and all. And I don't know if it's a wise thing to do, but you know, when you hit it, if I feel happy with it, that's good enough for me. I feel, you know, it does get harder because you don't have love affairs like you had when you were 18 or 28. They're not there anymore. So you can't say, you know, how deeply can you feel when you're saying, I don't need you anymore. Go away from me. Or I mean, those things happened to me when I was young. But they don't happen unless you can find something.
Yeah. So now it's maybe the sources of inspiration are different. Maybe news, maybe observations.
Observations. Yeah. I mean, it can happen. It can be one little thing that kicks you into a song. One idea, just one little idea to, you know, to give you inspiration. And I get inspiration from a title. Mm. I always used to work from a title.
Okay.
Because I found that a title, just I used to like one word as well. I had Liar was my first hit in America, and that was with Frida. Well, we recorded it with Argent. I put it on an album as a little blues song. I was trying to go back to like Chicago, like in the 20s, you know, that kind of blues. I won't ever leave while you want me to stay. Nothing you could do that could turn me up. Ain't that what you said? Ain't that what you said? Ain't that what you said?
Liar!
And that was inspiring. That was inspiring to do that. What was your question, Benjamin?
Yeah,
I'm
well,
sorry.
where you get the inspiration from, like you said, observation.
Yeah, it was one word. That was one word. That was one word. And I came up with lots of songs. I came up with a thing called, actually, with Argent, I came up with a song after Hold Your Head Up. My song was called Tragedy. That was it. That was, yeah, there was a single in America, and that was 1972.
But how did you do that in the pandemic, for example? Because there you were cut off from everyone else, like we all were.
No, it was just the same for me. I was just living the same way. I was always in the studio anyway. So, I found it difficult in the end. You know, when we had the third lockdown for me was hard because we weren't going out. There was no one going to restaurants, and I like to go out to eat and with people and meet people. But the nice thing about living here, the only good thing as far as I could see in the pandemic was that everybody was walking past here. The families were walking past. We got bridle paths here and footpaths, and they go on and on and on. And it was great to see families all walking together, you know. And I think it must have touched a nerve with those families, because we're getting more families now. And it's been said that more people now want to sort of, you know, they want that facility of spending more time with the families, which is good.
I feel like when you talk to young songwriters in the moment, seems they all have like TikTok in the back of their head when they construct a song. Like, here, that's how the song has to work. Must be TikTok compatible. For you back in the days, was it the same with like radio? Did you try to, okay, that's how a song for radio needs to work?
Yeah, well, you know, there aren't any rules. One thing I found out about in the music business is there's no rules, because Liar was a hit. I didn't write that. I wrote that as a blues tune, and that became a hit through the Three Dog Night. I didn't expect that. Didn't think it was that commercial, but they did it. Another thing is that a song like Bohemian Rhapsody, like as long as that is, everybody tried to talk Queen out of it because it's too long. It's not radio friendly. No, it's been a phenomenon. So there aren't any rules. But I would say, as on the whole, you don't bore people, right? So you have the chorus. Keep it short. Keep the start short. Get into the chorus. Tell a story. Make each section. Then you do the pre-chorus. Make that pre-chorus hooky. Make everything a little bit hooky, something that people would remember. Make the word, you know, when you get into the chorus, push the chorus, push the chorus, push the title, push the title, push the title. Because it's obvious, people, something, I like that song. What was it called? I don't know. Didn't you get the chorus? Didn't you hear it? Yeah. Didn't you hear the chorus? No, I couldn't hear the title. And that's another problem. You know, you're up against it, basically. But if you can keep pushing, or make it interesting, try to make each step interesting. And these days, make it short, because I was always writing 4 and 5 minute songs. And, you know, they always seemed to get to 4 minutes, and I was always trying to shorten them. When we did Hold Your Head Up in America, that lasted because Rod did about 3 minute keyboard solo in the original. Then we had to cut it down to 3 minutes. You know, we took most of the song away. And but that's, then it became radio friendly, became a hit.
As far as I understood, I mean, many artists recorded your songs, but you were not someone who wrote for other people. Like, you recorded your own songs, they took the songs, recorded it. It was not that you did it. You did the service, so to speak, to be a songwriter for someone else.
Yeah, but I did write the songs for me. Everything I wrote, except for two songs, I can't remember any others. I wrote them for me. This, the kind of thing I enjoy to do. I enjoy that kind of stuff. Although I was doing it, I was even doing things like this is why I'm saying to you, there aren't any rules. I used to love gospel music. I used to listen to things like Black Nativity, which was a great inspirational thing. I mean, Clara Ward singers and people like, I used to listen to them when I was 18, 19, 20. And I used to love it. And so I like to get, I play that kind of piano. I can play that kind of piano and I love it. And, you know, but I did a song as a demo and it wasn't particularly commercial. I just thought it was a nice thing. And it was called Free Me. And I wrote it, and the lyric was very much a gospel thing, you know. Free me, can't you hear? That's what I say. Free me, anyhow or any way. Down, bang, do do, down, then oh, open your eyes and look around. So many lives are raised to the ground, and free the people for whom it rains, and all that kind of stuff. Can't you hear me say, can't you hear me say, can't you hear me say, free me? You know. I thought this is never going to get recorded because this is a gospel song, you know, the whole thing, and it's not commercial, it's gospel. And then Roger Daltrey phoned me and said, I've heard this song, I love this song, Free Me. We're going to put it in this film. If you'll write some different lyrics to it, I said, what do you want? He said, well, it's about John McVicar, the criminal, you know, basically about his life. And so I'm going to play his part and I'm going to be in prison. How it would be if I was stuck in prison and I'm shouting, free me. You know, it's a totally different lyric. So I wrote a totally different lyric for it. But now I've written the original lyric on my one. So I've written that whole thing about, you know, free the people from the pain, people that are going through pain or whatever, you know, free just to the universe, basically, you know. Mm-hmm.
Is it true that Elvis almost recorded a song from you?
How do you know that one? Yeah. Well, yeah, I was with Island Music. They were my publishers years ago. And 1977. I said to them, I think I've got a song that would suit Elvis. Would you give some of the publishing away? Because I would give 50% if he would record one of my songs, you know. And they said, yeah, if you can get Elvis to record it. And I went to New York with my manager at the time. And we went and we went to see a guy called Freddie Beanstalk. You know, and he had Lieber and Stoller, Pomus and Schumann, and all these hit records. You walk through the corridor of the office and it's full of Jailhouse Rock, Teddy Bear, all this stuff. It's just amazing, you know. And they had the publishing to everything. So he listened to the song. He was great, you know. He listened to the song and he said, the song would suit Elvis. He said, it would suit Elvis. He said, but Elvis hasn't recorded for 2 years. And I said, this was 77, May 77. And I said, right. He said, he comes in Nashville and he records 5 tunes in one night and flies out. He hasn't done it for 2 years. And then Lieber and Stoller walked in on that day. Oh, I was like a kid in a candy store, you know, and chatting to them. And they said, we're trying to make Elvis do it. We're trying to make Elvis. Don't go out to Europe. We can't make him do it. We got this idea to do a film, go around a movie, to go around the world. And he ends up in the Rockies and he does the last. I said, maybe he prefers to do smaller venues, you know, he's more in touch with the audience, you know. That was May, June, July, and he died in August. But we signed it to him. We signed the song to him, you know. But it had a very Elvis thing. A couple of people said to me, that was so Elvis. I said, yeah, it was very Elvis. People toss it in, seeing you around. Say, come to think of it. It was very, very, it had that kind of thing. I did a demo like that, actually. But I worked with one of those guys, actually, the guy that wrote for Elvis. That was Mort Schumann. Mm-hmm. He wrote a lot for Elvis, you know. He told me he wrote 30 songs for Elvis. But he said, I wrote a lot for the movies, so a lot of them weren't so good. But he wrote some of my favorite songs, you know. A very old friend came by today. He was telling everyone in town. My lady's flying down. But he wrote some beautiful tunes. Feel So Bad. And well, he even wrote Viva Las Vegas. He wrote it with Doc Pomus Mort Schumann.
Yeah, legendary.
Became friends. I wrote four songs with him for his album, which was great. He's a wonderful man. I wish I'd have known him a lot longer.
Mm. Yeah. Huge Elvis fan. I would have liked to hear that song, by the way.
I'll send it to you. It was recorded by Lulu, actually, after that. It was recorded, but I know she did it because I went and did backing vocals. I did backing vocals with a couple of other guys. I might have it somewhere, Benjamin. If I can find it, I'll send it to you.
That would be awesome. Yeah. I could talk with you for hours. It's really interesting. There are so many questions I still have on.
we'll have to do another one. We could do another one later.
We'll do another one, exactly.
Yeah.
If you're coming now to Germany, to Karlsruhe, what can fans expect from these concerts? You plan to play the double album?
I play a lot of the songs, you know. I do Since You've Been Gone. I do God Gave Rock and Roll to You. We do. I've got a good band, so I mean, it's a great band, a really exciting band. I do hits I've had for other people, but songs that have touched a nerve of mine is where I do voices. I do Into the Night or In the Night. I do. No More the Fool, that I had a hit with Elkie Brooks in England. I put that on the album. So we playing all these different things, blues, a few blues tunes. We do Liar. So there's quite a few tunes you might recognize on there. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to it. For me, coming to Germany is a bit like coming home now.
Was always a good location, good market for you.
I love it. Yeah. Bavaria is very, very good. I go up there and great, you know, Munich and Nuremberg and Augsburg, Regensburg and those places have always been good for me. But and I've got some great friends up there now after all these years. I've got some great friends in Germany.
Do you still enjoy that, being on the road, being on tour?
Yeah, you know, it's the reason I got into music in the first place. It wasn't to write songs. It was just to learn the guitar and play in a band with your friends. You know, I started that when I was 13. I could play the piano already because I was going to piano lessons, but I wanted a guitar and then to get in a band. And I was in a band from when I was 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, you know, and it went on and on and on. Traveled the world with different bands. Turned professional when I was 16. Then I was in the Roulettes with Adam Faith. I was in the Unit 4 Plus 2 that had a big hit in America. Then went with the Argent. And then I left and started to write tunes more. And, you know, I could always write.
Mm.
I could always write. But it's the best thing in the world, to be honest. You know, I always say, to me, writing songs, going into the studio, they say to achieve something every day. So when you write songs, you go into the studio, you just achieve something like a drum loop. You put a drum loop up and it's recorded again. Then you put a bass on, then you put a guitar on, then you put the words on. And each component is like, it's like a bliss. For me, it's like bliss. And the world makes sense.
Mm.
You know, most of the time, much of the time, the world doesn't make sense. Love makes sense to me, but you meet somebody or your family and stuff, and you know, you realize how much you and friends. I've got so many good friends, younger friends I'm writing with now, and but that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And music makes sense. And I think, you know, passion makes sense. If you find a passion, it makes sense. It just makes sense because the world makes sense because you look forward to every moment. Every mm-hmm. moment. There's so much to look forward to. I guess being a painter would be the same, finding a new thing to write about, to paint, or which, you know, what do I use? Pastel? Do I use watercolor? Do I use oils or whatever? And what am I going to paint? It all makes sense to, you know, but it's not work. It's not work that you're forced to do to make a living.
Exactly.
And now a message from our sponsors.
The world talks about Africa, but when you want real insights, it crickets. That's why we built Raw Academy. Access in-depth insights from Africa's top entrepreneurs, investors, and industry leaders. Not just headlines, but real strategies, real opportunities. Discover high-growth sectors, navigate emerging markets, and learn the nuances that drive success. At Raw, we give you the tools to make decisions that are smart, strategic, and profitable. From tech and startups to agriculture and energy, we connect you to Africa's most promising sectors. This isn't about charity, it's about opportunity. Business leaders, investors, and entrepreneurs, it's time to take action. Visit the Raw website at resources.raw.academy. Gain the knowledge, make the move, and own the future.